Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 405. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are Guillaume Fayette.
I'm just freezing my ass off over here.
Yeah, it's single digits here, too. Fahrenheit. Also, of course, another guy who thinks in Celsius, Mr. John Lindemann.
Hey, but you know where it's not cold as hell? Southern California, ladies and gentlemen.
Sweet Cali, you bastard. We also, of course, have Mr. James Jones.
It's manageable temperatures around here.
You're a manageable temperature.
I'm an unmanageable heat source, John.
you're not manageable at all, James. Anyway, we have tons of games to talk about because it's November and things are coming out and we're playing a lot, and I don't have a job, so I'm playing tons of crap right now because, you know, that may not be the case for much longer. So anyway, we have a lot to talk about, and Guillaume is going – oh, before we get started, let me just say – it's great to be back to normal, and I really want to thank everybody who participated and supported the telethon last weekend, and I hope people have been enjoying the recordings. They will all be out by the time you hear this. It is 10 hours of crazy, crazy stuff, and we did meet after the telethon was recorded. We did meet the next stretch goal, which is Zach Miller's To Catch a Prehistoric Predator.
Dear God.
Live Q&A about dinosaurs. So we don't have a date for that yet, but that will be happening soon, I'm sure. And Zach is a real expert on dinosaurs, and it's always fun to hear him talk about that stuff. So we will try to let you know, and of course the connectivity guys will as well. So be sure to keep an ear out for that stuff. But I'm very glad to see that we continue to get donations even after the telethon was over, and we even reached a new goal, which was awesome.
Yeah, I'm impressed that our audience actually wanted and would put cold hard cash down to listen to Zach talk about dinosaurs. I don't really know what to make of that, but
you know, I don't know what to make of, John, what you just said.
Skype.
Love Skype.
Yeah, it was hard to understand. Anyway.
Should we have laughed? We can just add the laughter here.
Speaking of John blanking out, that was a real joy during the telethon.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, I felt so bad for you guys, especially on a 2-man segment. That's rough when one person is having connection problems.
Yeah,
but sometimes there's not much you can do about it. Anyway,
nope.
All right, well, we're going to kick it off now with new business, and Guillaume is going first because he played something that just came out today, and I think a lot of people will want to hear about the Mario Kart 8 DLC.
Everyone, I think, at this point knows what the DLC entails. There's three new characters, and by three new characters, I mean two old characters in new suits, and one new character in Link from a completely different franchise, which is a big deal, because up until now, every racer, every character, every setting in Mario Kart games were from the Mario franchise, and now we've got the freaking Hyrule Castle, and we've got Link riding Epona, or an Epona bike.
Yeah, of course the Mario universe is pretty broad in scope. I mean, it captures a whole bunch of crazy stuff, including, you know, a lot of Donkey Kong characters. But it's still, I have to say, I mean, I got this today too, it is weird to see Link and in a Zelda stage in Mario Kart. It's really cool. It's just, it's strange, you know, and the same for the F-Zero track. It's like, wow, this is, it's like,
this is actually happening.
I've dreamed about Nintendo Kart or Smash Kart or whatever you want to call it for so long. And now that it's kind of happening piece by piece, it's hard to believe that it's real.
Well, and we were talking about this when the game came out, and we were all somewhat ambivalent on yet another Mario Kart. We said, why don't they just go ahead and stick the other Nintendo characters in there, for God's sake? And then they're like, you know what? We can do that.
I don't know. You could be cynical about it and think, well, Mario Kart 8 could have had characters and things from outside the Mario franchise, you know, right out of the gate. And perhaps, like, they just did that for the DLC. Maybe they saved that idea for the DLC specifically to sell the DLC. No, I understand that there's already
content in the first place.
I know it does have a lot of content, but you got to admit that there's already like a pink gold Peach and you know, a golden Mario or something.
Yeah, I mean,
and you know, in addition to that, now there's a cat costume Peach, and there is a Tanuki suit Mario.
Oh, there's no doubt there's some bad characters in there or some things that could have just been alternate costumes. But and the babies, of course. You're right. But
the baby.
I think, again, they might have stretched on a couple of those character slots to fill them out at the time, but they needed to get that game out when they did. They needed it before that, but they got it out as soon as they could. And I think, you know, it's not like they held back anything. I mean, the fact that this DLC is coming out several months after the first game, I think shows that they were working on this after the game was released. So that's kind of what you want from DLC. That's what I want from it.
It's pretty likely that they had already planned out that they were going to do this before the game came out. But
yeah, maybe.
But probably not in the timeline. I mean, because they announced
credit, they didn't talk about it, which is a massive pet peeve of mine when they announce DLC before the game is even out. I can't imagine what drives an executive to think that's a good idea.
Oh, it's because we want people to know right away that, just so you know, season pass
is
coming.
That's
up.
A huge turn. That's a pretty good sign that I'm not going to buy that game at all.
Yeah,
if they're talking about DLC before the game even launches, then fuck you.
Yeah, for me, it really depends what kind of DLC it is. Like, for map packs, I don't mind that because chances are that stuff is not done before the game launches. So I can get that. I can get that. I'm not totally, like, you know, I don't know.
But why does anybody need to know about it? Why don't you focus on finishing the game and telling me what's in the game before you worry about DLC that comes later?
Keep in mind, the average third-party game's lifespan is not what a Nintendo game's is. Its time in the sun on the shelf is relatively limited.
Yeah. Right. So, a lot of people just trade away their games as soon as they're done with them. So I think that companies have to let it be known right away that there's going
to
be extra content.
Yep.
Yeah. That's
so there's
combating.
That. And there's also the fact that they want to push people to buy the more expensive collector's edition. And the easy way to do a collector's edition is to, you know, kind of include the season pass with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I think all that is terrible, so I can't get behind it. But yeah, I mean, there's some rationality to it, sure. I don't. None of this really has anything to do with the Mario Kart 8 DLC, because I don't think was at all the motivation here. And also, I think just as a value, I mean, if you buy the two packs together, which I waited to do until basically last night, I didn't see any reason to pre-order it. But you're getting, and it's less than a dollar per track, and these are good tracks. They're beautiful too, and I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of these playing online, especially. So I think it's a fantastic value. Of course, if you don't want it, don't buy it. But you know, you can't really argue that they're trying to fleece their customers or anything. I think actually just the sheer volume of sales they're going to get off these DLC packs probably allows them to price it lower than is the case for a lot of other games. But when you compare, what do you get in a typical map pack, a $15 Call of Duty map pack? You get like three or four maps?
Yeah, you usually get about four maps, typically.
Yeah, and I'm not saying a first-person shooter map is equivalent to a Mario Kart track, but I feel like the amount of content that we got in this first pack is easily worth $8 or $6 or whatever it was.
Right.
$6, I guess, if you buy both.
And there is a surprising number, I think, of retro tracks, but they're pretty good. Like the very first track that you play in the Egg Cup, which is Egg Cup, I don't know, is the Yoshi Circuit from the GameCube game. Mm-hmm. And I had never really played Double Dash, and I wasn't sure about this track because it's very twisty. There's a lot of hairpin turns,
tough.
After the other, after the other, after the other. So it really helps to know the track. But once I got more familiar with it, I'm kind of starting to like it. There's a lot of cool shortcuts, and there's a lot of, you know, if you screw this, then you're screwed. You know, like it demands a lot of racing perfection and a lot
it's
of.
It's a high stakes track.
Yeah.
As I learned today.
And with 12 people in it, it's chaos. It's just pure chaos. The Excite Bike track, which, you know, a lot of people put a lot of smiles on a lot of faces when it was revealed, is I've seen people say, oh, it's actually disappointing. It's actually kind of one of the least interesting tracks. And it is just an oval. It does have Excite Bike NES type obstacles.
I mean, there is a certain amount of strategy in, like, a surprising amount of strategy in Excite Bike for the NES. So I hope they do capture that.
Well, the thing is, here you don't you know, control, like, it's not like you have to control the tilt of your kart when you're landing or anything like that. And you don't have to feather the turbo to avoid overheating your engine. But there is a lot of, you know, jumps and bumps, and you can, do tricks off all of them. So it's pretty cool like that. And because it is an oval, it's not quite baby park. But it's a lot
bigger and more stretched out than that.
Absolutely. So
got two huge straightaways.
It means, though, that people behind you can align their green shells and send them, mm-hmm. you know, it will take a long time for them to get to you, but eventually it will, you know. If you don't move left and right, you will get hit, and eventually it gets really chaotic as more and more items are just bumping around. I really, really like it.
Yeah, it's my favorite, I think, of the new tracks so far. And it really made me kind of wish for a new 3D Excitebike. I don't mean World Rally on WiiWare. I mean, like, a, you know, more something more like Excitebike 64, but maybe with the style, you know, with the visual appeal and the simplicity of the original, which is kind of what you get here, because this looks like NES Excitebike, but in 3D.
Right.
And I think it looks really great. And because all the features of the track, whether the hills generally are good for you because you can trick off them and there's coins at the top, right? But there's also the mud spills and there's rough areas on the track that you need to go around. And these are all lane-based, right? So certain lanes have these things, certain ones don't. And so you're constantly switching lanes, just like an Excitebike, mm-hmm. to try to choose the best path through all this stuff. And when you add that in with all the items and all the bumping and everything else that goes on in Mario Kart – I think it's fantastic. I think it's really fun. And even on these straightaways, they put so many different features and different things you need to watch out for that even a really long straightaway is not dull at all. In fact, that's really exciting because that's where all the action happens.
Right. Like, it's just satisfying to do, like, you jump, do a trick, and then land right on top of the next jump and do a trick mm-hmm. right away. And it's, so it's very fast and, it's a lot of fun. And actually, like, you remind me, like, you'd like a new Excitebike. What are Monster Games doing? Do we know?
I don't know.
Yeah, nobody knows.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were involved in making some of this DLC. I was thinking about that today. I mean, it's not necessarily the Mario Kart team who's making these tracks. Could be Retro Studios jumping back in. Could be a team like Monster Games who's sort of helping to support these games after they're out so the Mario Kart team can go on and do something else. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it seems plausible. Mm-hmm. But I also think Monster Games is probably working on something big and new that we'll find out maybe at E3.
Right. Another track is the Hyrule Castle. That one is okay. I haven't noticed anything that makes it special outside of the aesthetics.
There are
rupees instead of coins. That's a neat touch. It's fun.
I like that.
And you do have some sort of shortcut. It's not much of a shortcut, but it is kind of a ramp that goes up and down. So sometimes you can't go through it. Sometimes you can. And it goes like right through the Master Sword if you can get it.
Your character, there's like an animation when you go through the Master Sword, and I don't know if that's meant to be a switch. Does that maybe turn off the ramp or something like that? It's hard to tell because that the ramp is now behind you, but the ramp is definitely there sometimes, and other times it's not.
So kind of like a split second kind of thing where you screw up the track behind you as you go through it?
It could be. I don't know for sure, again, because it's you can't see behind you in Mario Kart, so I don't know exactly what's going on there, but... I played that track one time where I went around three laps and I never saw the ramp. So right. I don't think it's lap based. I think it's something that's activated or deactivated somehow.
It might be. I haven't figured it out yet, but it's pretty cool. Just the fact that it exists.
It looks nice. Looks really nice.
Yeah. And there's a kicking, kind of rock version of the Legend of Zelda theme. It's pretty good. Especially like the last track, the last lap around the track, it gets even crazier. The music is so good in Mario Kart 8. It's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so much better than in the Wii game. Another track that really impressed me is called, I think, Ice Ice
Baby.
I know the one you're talking about.
I can't remember
now.
But it is pretty cool because there's no ice. Like, it's not a winter level. Just the background is, but you're racing on the kind of a solid track that's not slippery. So I like that. But also, it's kind of these two tracks that keep intertwining, just keep, you know, crisscrossing, and you can jump from one to the other. And so there's a lot of potential there. Like, I, of course, it's too early to really have mastered it, but you can see, like, okay, there's probably an optimal way to get through this, and you're probably meant to jump from the yellow piece of the track to the blue piece of the track at this spot and this spot to really, you know, beat your times and go through the course optimally.
What I like about that one, and I agree with everything you said, but the other thing I like about it is that it's basically, you know, there's a few tracks in Mario Kart 8 where you have two different ways you can go, and maybe they crisscross at different times. But the difference here is that they're completely parallel. They're right next to each other for the entire length of the track. So yes, you always know, at least know what's going on in the other lane, which is important in Mario Kart because you have weapons and you're trying to avoid things. And the other thing is there's lots of opportunities to crisscross because sometimes these two lanes are flat and even and you can just freely move back and forth. Sometimes one will rise up in elevation while the other dips down. And then it's a one way. So you can only go from the top one. You can fall down to the lower one. But the fact that there's so many opportunities to do this means you can be really strategic about it. And yes, there may be an ideal racing line that people will learn to abuse. I'm sure that always happens in Mario Kart, but also, there may be situations in which by taking the non-ideal switch over to the other lane, for instance, you might be able to avoid a red shell or something like that.
Right.
So it's all situational as well. And I really like the opportunities that affords and just the, you know, when you have two sections of the track that diverge, it serves to simplify the race a little bit because, you know, there's 12 carts, but now some of them go this way, some of them go that way. And so it's nice that the action maybe simplifies a little bit, but also you don't really know what's going on over there. And you see your position, you go from fourth down to eighth and then back up to sixth. And you don't, it's like, I'm just trying to race. I don't, you know, I don't know what's going on here. And also there's always the questions of, is this the faster path? Is that, you know, so like you have to race the tracks a lot of times before you really get that feeling. And on this one, they're so close together that you just always know what's going on. And that's so important in this game.
Right. And you kind of make me think, made me think of something. I never play battle mode, because it does take these tracks and you can battle on them, which is stupid. In previous games, they were arenas, but now you're actually battling on the racing tracks. But in this case, I think it would perhaps make for an interesting battle track because, you know, you can jump from one track to the next and you can try to avoid someone pursuing you, perhaps, you know, and, you know, kind of a cat and mouse thing going on. So that could be cool.
Yeah, that's a really good thought.
I'll probably never find out.
I've never even tried battle mode in this game.
Sometimes it can be fun if it's a full roster, like 12 people. But most of the time, I think I'd just rather race. So what else? Like, there's the Rainbow Road from the NES game, Super NES game.
Yeah, I'm still terrible at it. I always
have been. It's pretty hard, and I find it harder than in Mario Kart 7. Which also had this kind of reimagining of the Super Nintendo Rainbow track, where it, like every time that the thwomps land on the track, it causes ripples and you can do tricks off those ripples. And I find it harder to pull off in this version than in the Mario Kart 7 version.
I agree.
I don't know. I was not doing well at all. And I hate it. There's also there was another good track. Oh yeah, the F-Zero track, Mute City. Really kick-ass music, of course. And it's just as twisty as you would expect, and it's just not nearly fast enough. God damn it!
It is. I mean, for a Mario Kart track, it's extremely fast, though.
It is. It is, because for a lot of the track, you are kind of in hover mode, and there's a lot of those bumpers that you can bump into.
You're always in hover mode. I think this is the only track in the game that you're always in hover mode, which makes sense because in F-Zero, everything's a hover car.
Right.
So that changes the way you play the game because you always want to be bumping into things and other cars. Mm-hmm. But also, there are no coins on this track. So that you can use the recovery strips, where in F-Zero that would recover your damage from bumping into the sides. But in Mario Kart, you just run over those and they fill up your coins really fast.
Right.
And so if people attack you and various things and you lose some of your coins, you can just go over those to fill it back up. But basically it means you can fill up to 10 coins almost immediately when the race starts.
Right.
And then you're just going for boost pads, and there's way more boost pads on this track than on most Mario Kart tracks. So the whole thing is just blazingly fast.
Yeah.
That was great.
I really love it. And yes, there's a lot and a lot of boost pads, and it's just perfect for this theme. So I miss F-Zero. God damn it. I don't really have many more thoughts. Like, we did start a tourney for this week with Nintendo World Report people, or listeners of this show, or readers of the website, and the competition is really, really fierce. I think that Greg, it was at the top earlier today, but someone beat him.
He's really good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
And it's the tourney thing. The tourney thing, it's the first time that I've tried it. It's kind of weird because you can have a tourney when there's only two people in the waiting room. And so, like, you start a race and the rest of the racers are actually computer controlled, which is, not nearly as much fun. And people can just come in just whenever and leave whenever. And once you've reached the number of races required, I think it's 8. Mm-hmm. Then the game just kicks you out and, like,
well, that's
okay,
a setting, but yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I think after 8 tracks, the game kicked me out. I had a paltry, like, 61 points. I don't know if I can try again. I don't know if I would have had better chances if, I hadn't had a full roster of 12 human players for most of those. So yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I wouldn't do a serious tourney with those settings, but it's pretty cool. It's pretty fun to just set this room, give this code to people, and it's kind of less of a hassle to start a race with a number of people that you might not be on your friends list.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. So that tournament is ongoing, and I set this one. This is the second one. The first one I screwed it up. I guess I tried to do it correctly, but I set it up last night before the DLC was available.
Right.
And I guess they updated the game to 3.0 this morning before the DLC opened up for everybody. And in doing so, they added a setting to tournaments where you can change which cups are available. And now you can include the DLC cups if you want to as part of the tournament. But that option wasn't there last night when I set up the first tournament. So, but that one was only for one day, so that'll be gone by the time this episode goes out. But the correct one, which is, you can search for it, is called RFN DLC True. And there's a way to search just by name. We've also been tweeting the code, but you don't have to have that. It's open for everybody. And
right.
And I did turn on computer because I figured it's more fun to play with a full set than it is with only two people. But like you said, I mean, it'll replace computer players with people if they show up. And but yeah, I mean, your success in the tournament will depend entirely on who happens to be playing at the same time as you.
Right.
And if it's, I set the computers to normal, so they're not too difficult, but they're there, and they will, they'll mess you up. You can also turn the computer off, but then you might be playing the whole tournament with just one other person on the track.
Right.
And that didn't seem like much fun to me. So it is a strange setup, but yeah, it's still open, and it'll go through Thursday, the Thursday after this episode goes out. So if you want to participate, you can go do that. And I'm sure you're better than Guillaume or I. I'm terrible at Mario Kart Online. I kind of think of it as like 250cc because it feels like playing the Grand Prix, except way harder.
Yeah, it can be pretty harsh.
Yeah. Like, I'm very competitive on 150cc against the computer, but you throw me up in online and all of a sudden I just feel like, I felt I was okay at Mario Kart, but now I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Mario Kart 8 DLC is great, and it always seems to, in the tourney, to suggest, like, at least one of the DLC tracks. Like, you can vote out of 3 tracks and 1 random. I think that there's always at least one DLC choice in there. So it's pretty well made.
And that's the one that's going to win the vote.
Usually, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I will be playing more of it, and it's going to be hard to wait another 6 months for the second one. But I'm excited there's going to be even more of this, because the 8 new tracks I really like the vast majority of them. All right, well, let's move on to James, who also has a
Sorry, I was asleep. Where are we at?
We're talking about a game that you own, but let's talk about a different game that you own.
So I did the dump of a bunch of games I bought and asked our listeners to tell me which one I should play, and you people can't fucking decide anything. I basically got basically every game got almost the exact same number of votes, which is just fucking garbage. Get it together, people.
That's obviously orchestrated that way.
Get it to fucking together.
For this
I don't
precise
need this.
Reaction. You're playing into their hands, James.
I do this for you, and you reward me by saying no. Have some fucking ambivalence. And I just said, great. Ambivalence shipped directly to my door through the magic of the internet. So we went with the game that I am most ambivalent about, Hyrule Warriors.
So you were asleep for the Mario Kart 8 segment, and now you're going to talk about Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, because one of these games has action. It's fucking action all over the place. Dude, so James, I killed 2,000 people last night. I got the action. I am Pol Pot at my chair. I mean, I
killed 2,000 people. What have you done?
Exactly. What have you done? Nothing.
And are you
done.
Still ambivalent about it even after killing 2,000 people last night?
Well, there's 2,000 less people to feed, so I'm okay about that. In general, all right, here's the thing about the kind of Musou style games. They are
shit?
No.
Kusuge?
To an extent, there's a certain degree of kusuge about them, but saying game is kusuge and saying game is shit is kind, even though they mean the same thing, is kind of unfair, because kusuge games usually have something about them.
Yeah,
that,
something endearing.
Yeah, that comes through. Whereas a game that is just shit is just Sonic Boom.
True.
Right. So in this case, there's kind of two ways these games can go. They can just be over the top, stupid, ridiculous nonsense where you just reap enemies like grain, or they can just be repetitive, boring, stupid nonsense where you reap enemies like grain. There's kind of no middle ground. The game needs to do something that makes it engrossing for reasons other than the gameplay. And there is a certain degree of catharsis that comes with these games in and of itself, because you're just wailing on dudes. And there is a certain amount of strategy that comes with these games. I think it undersells these games, so you just hit A until you win. Because you can find yourself in binds, you can put yourself in positions where you can't complete the objective because you've gone off and done something stupid. There was a mission in this game where you had to defeat both Link and Zelda at the same time, but if you let them get together, you ended up in a real bad place. So you kind of had to plan out where you wanted to be to sort of prevent one from getting to the other. But that meant you had to lead people there to engage one and tie them up while you ran to the other one to try to lock them down in a place. So there's a lot of this kind of managing the battlefield at a macro level. And then there is actually, this game has a pretty decent combo system where you can chain attacks together to get different effects. So it works out. It's not, you know, it's not a character action game, but it's certainly more than just hammering the A button. So from a gameplay standpoint, though, it is just run around these maps, kill a fucking ton of dudes, and then at some point, hopefully you can declare victory. How this game sort of engages you is it sort of just takes the Zelda lore and just says, ah, fuck it, I don't care, let's get crazy. And you end up with things like, hey, this is a portal to other times in the Zelda timeline. Here's Fi just coming out talking about random shit. And you're like, all right, game, do it. I don't care. So there's this sense of nothing you're doing matters, while they're also going and just going way over the top with bringing in a narrator to kind of narrate this dumb bullshit story. They're just throwing this soundtrack at you that no Zelda game would ever feature. It remix of Zelda themes with like booming guitar riffs and just complete bullshit nonsense. It's the soundtrack in this game is wonderful in its stupidity.
I was going to say, do you actually like this?
The music, some of the music's legitimately good, but it's so overwrought that it's fantastic. It fits this game perfectly. There's scenes where you're running with, I don't know, 400 of Hyrule's finest across an open field at just another 400 moblins coming directly at you. They slam into each other and then just stand there. And you're like, yes, this is what I'm here for. So there is a certain amount of just, you know, accepting that this game is stupid and this game you know, gameplay wise, obviously doesn't do a whole hell of a lot that no other Warriors games do.
So,
but it does.
What I want to know is, would you wait in line for a scarf for this game?
But John, today it was cold outside.
Okay, that's very valid. That's a valid factor.
My neck was feeling kind of drafty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo denied me the right to have a warm neck.
It's about ethics and scarf journalism.
It's not journalism. It's about ethics and scarves. God.
Please continue.
More pressingly, beyond scarf and other kinds of neckwear, the gameplay, you know, it is what it is. But it manages to fall in that category of, okay, this is a Warriors game that works. This is a Warriors game that manages to hit enough of those other things, those other elements of presentation, of design, of story, of, you know, like the upgrade tree where you can go and buy upgrades to your characters. And it does enough that you can sort of piece together a reasonably enjoyable experience out of the game. I mean, I've gone and played it for, you know, an hour, 2 hours straight and not realized that that was happening, just because it is a fairly mindless experience. You can just go, this game's being real stupid right now. That's great. There's something about the fact that after every battle that pretty much looks like every other battle, the narrator comes through and just starts giving you this, like, she's like the recording you'd have for like a kid's storybook read along. It's just like, this is bonkers. And they have like heads floating into the screen as she tells the story. And you're just like, yep, just do this to me, game. I'm just going to sit here and take it. I'm happy with what you've done right now.
I'm on the stupid ride. Just take me wherever you want to go.
I would say the converse of these is they've done other kinds of tie-in Musou games. They've done about 1,000 Gundam ones at this point. And I think the takeaway on those is just, it's like, here's character from random series. He's yelling. Here's character from other random series. He is also yelling. And those just don't end up feeling right. Whereas this one feels like, okay, this is enough of a Zelda game that I'm like, yeah, I recognize these people. And yeah, they're kind of talking in character, but also, yeah, this is real fucking stupid. So I'm happy to be here. This has been a reasonably enjoyable experience. The game itself is actually fairly lengthy, not super long, but it's got some legs to it. It's not hard because it's a Musou game. It is what it is. Actually, when Addison was here after our segment, we tried playing the multiplayer, which I don't know if I've ever heard anybody talk about. Couple notes on the multiplayer. One, player one has the gamepad, player two's on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Limited to two players.
Frame rate is ass.
It actually was holding up okay when we were playing it.
That's okay.
It wasn't
great.
You're
the first person I've heard not complain about that.
Well, they've patched it about 17 times too.
Oh, interesting.
So well, I'm on version 1.5 or something like that.
Okay.
There was a huge patch when they did the DLC. I mean, enormous. So it had issues, but it wasn't just dying. It was holding it together for the most part. The more puzzling problems we had with the game, I don't have a Wii U Pro controller because I very rarely have people over who want to play games. So, whatever. But we went and I have the Nintendo or the Wii Remote Pro controller, so we were going to use that. But it wasn't on the back of the box. We figured, they must just not felt like the need to put it on there. No, it's not supported. So, but Wii Remote and Nunchuck is. So Addison got to play the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, which is surprisingly a bad experience in a game that uses four face buttons plus the D-pad plus two control sticks and four shoulder buttons. It uses all of them, but with the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, it's kind of a challenge. So that was a real impressive experience by Omega Force to not include a controller that is literally exactly the same, just with different hardware attached to it. So in multiplayer, you can only do the challenge mode, not the story mode. So it's really just like kill 400 enemies in 5 minutes. And what I found is that having a second player wiping out the enemies didn't actually make that experience any better. So I'm not really enjoying anything besides the main story mode, which, you know, has its limits. I know there's a ton of DLC out for this game, and I think in Japan there's a ton more that hasn't even come out yet. So we'll see. It's got a lot of characters to start with, so I don't really know that I need to buy any more because I feel like I'll probably be done with it. But it's certainly an experience that if you think you can kind of deal with the games being a little bit monotonous, it's enjoyable enough on its merits that you could get through it. I think it knows what it is, and it's not trying to be high art. And in that way, it works out okay. Like, it's, you know, it's just dumb. Like, Ganondorf running around throwing bombs is the dumbest fucking shit ever. It just is. It's stupid. It's idiotic that he has to throw a boomerang to kill these giant monsters because he's fucking Ganondorf. He has a piece of the Triforce in him. Nice little boomerang. But it's fine because you just sort of accept this game as being dumb. And I'm happy with that.
It's very unlikely that I'll play this game because I only try to buy it to play games that try to be high art. So
you're a tasteful gentleman.
Good thing for you, it's try and most fail. So it's good. It's good to know. You know, I this game isn't Sengoku Basara stupid, but it's as dumb as Nintendo would have let them be with the license, which I'm fine with. This is fine. The new characters they introduce are dumb, so that's where they got their stupid in. So I appreciate it. Lana is the fucking stupidest character I've ever seen, so thank you for that, Omega Force.
And you can play as the bug girl. So that's
you can, great. And she's creepy as hell still. Thank you, game.
Excellent.
They good. Captured her creepiness perfectly.
Yeah, I can get behind that. All right. Well, John, why don't you go next with new business?
My new biz is The Binding of Isaac Rebirth for Vita, rumored to be coming out on 3DS, correct?
Teased, I would say. Yeah, there was a picture on Twitter from Tyrone Rodriguez, who is the publisher of this game at Nicolas, and it's an image of the game on a TV, but then there's like a 3DS debug unit next to it. So that would be an interesting close to a very rough saga with really not even just Binding of Isaac on 3DS, but even before that with Super Meat Boy on WiiWare, that Edmund McMillan has been trying for a long time to get his games on Nintendo platforms. And it'd be nice if it finally happened after years and years later.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see why Nintendo would be hesitant to put this out.
It's a fucked up game.
It is a really fucked up game. I'm actually trying to kind of just absorb sort of what its deal is. Because I remember, I think it was you, Johnny, that talked about this a long time ago.
I played it on PC, the original, and then the Rebirth is like a kind of a nicer version of it that's now on consoles too.
Yeah, because I remember you saying the one thing that sticks out to me that you said about it was, you know, because it starts off, I mean, the intro right off the bat gets real weird. Because, you know, like the intro, you know, there's like overtones of, you know, child abuse, you know, Christianity sort of overtaking somebody's life and stuff like that. Really, really weird. Really creepy and off-putting right off the bat.
But this is my kind of game, trying to be high art.
Well,
right?
See,
child abuse in a game.
Well, I don't see that.
That's what I'm looking for.
That's where it kind of like the actual gameplay really doesn't reflect that a lot.
The exact statement you just made, put in other words, is hey, the gameplay doesn't represent child abuse.
No, I'm saying what I mean is. No, obviously the game. Darn, the game doesn't let you abuse a child. That really sucks. That's categorically not what I'm saying, James.
We're pushing all the buttons here.
The thing is, it doesn't seem to really explore those themes the way. Like, it starts off with a really, really dark mood, but then just kind of becomes a Zelda, like, overhead, you know, kind of deal.
Well, that intro was added for the Rebirth Edition, and I'm not sure it was a good idea because, I mean, it gets at the, I guess, the story about, you know, why are you controlling a baby running around in caves, attacking like monsters that look kind of like mutant versions of yourself? Why do you have, like dead versions of your siblings attached to you with umbilical cords following you around, and they're like your helper units? Why is the boss of the game your mom, who's like trying to stomp on you with her high heels? There's a lot of completely disturbing stuff in this game that I think in the original, you sort of built the story or your interpretation of the story out of that stuff, out of all those elements. And in this one, they add this intro that's a lot more explicit about what's going on. And I don't know that that's a real good idea, but maybe they did a bunch of focus testing or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because the game seems a lot – the game is certainly dark, but it seems a lot sillier or less – I don't know. the word that's coming up to mind is harmful, like less, I don't know, less alarming than the intro would indicate, you know? Like,
yeah, it is silly to an extent, but it mixes a lot of absurd, silly stuff with a lot of kind of serious or just really like truly gross and disturbing things.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the levels are full of like piles of poo.
Yeah.
Surrounded by flies that are one of the most common enemies in the game. And there's a lot of like really goofy stuff like that that's not serious at all, I don't think. But yeah, yeah. And then there's stuff that where you're just like, really? Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And some of the dreams that the character has, these little silent cutscenes between levels. Some of like you see Isaac, he's like having nightmares and you see these visually in a thought bubble, and some of them are like really, really messed up.
Yeah. It's just it's a very strange little game. Yeah, I mean I like the way that, you know, they kind of enhance your powers and let you kind of do different things. Like it's, you know, of course it's all very kind of dark and creepy. Like the one power up that you can equip when you get hit, you leave behind a toxic blood trail, which is actually quite handy. So you have this, it's just weird because, I mean, you're playing this little child running around the screen, trailing blood everywhere, and then his enemies run over it and they die in the toxic blood. And just yeah. All kinds of stuff like that.
That's one of like dozens of power-ups and upgrades that you may or may not get because it's all randomly generated.
Yeah, now I was only able to get, like, I didn't actually get through, I got through the first, because you keep, like, when you die, you just kind of start over again from the very beginning. So I didn't get to the first real boss. I did the four mini bosses, but I couldn't get to the fifth one. So I don't know what happens after that. Does it just all reset, or do you move on to like another set of levels?
Well, you unlock some stuff if you can beat the boss's mom. She's the one, and she goes, "Isaac."
I'm sure it's really creepy.
Oh yeah.
Most of the bosses are creepy.
Yeah, but if you beat her, then you unlock some additional levels out after that that look like you're inside of a uterus, and then there may be even more beyond that, I would guess. But that's as far as I've gotten. So yeah. It's a roguelike in the sense that you when you die, you have to start over from the beginning and everything resets. But there are any number of things that you can unlock through the course of playing. Each time you go through that are more persistent.
Mm-hmm.
So you can unlock more characters to start with. And some of them are really different. They have very different powers and they play completely differently.
Yeah. In this one, yeah. In Rebirth, I haven't played, I've only played with Isaac, but I believe that I think some of those characters are unlocked from the very beginning. There's a bunch. There's like eight of them there. Like, cause you can choose which one you want to be at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, there's a couple that are either from the beginning or you get them really quickly, but almost all of them tell you how to unlock them. And so you can go in with a certain thing in mind, like, well, I'm going to try to collect a lot of money because that's one way you can unlock a character, or I'm going to try to get as many hearts as I can, or I'm going to try to beat the first two levels without getting hit. And that's one I'm still trying to do because that's really difficult. But as you play the game more and more, you will unlock things that do persist between runs, including sometimes items. You know, you'll find something and it'll make an item appear in the shop that wasn't there before. And these things over time can help you get farther and farther and farther into the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm going to keep playing it, but it's kind of like I went into it blind and I'm just kind of like, wow, this is a weird game. Like what? it seems like the game is trying to make a statement or prove a, I don't know, prove a point, but I don't know what that point is. So it's just kind of comes across as weird. I mean, all of the art design, I would describe it as kind of like, kind of sloppy Super Meat Boy, sort of. Like everything is all squishy and, you know, there's a lot of blood and entrails and kind of, I don't know, it's weird. It's a weird game. Definitely. I don't know. I haven't played enough of it to know if I could recommend it or not, but it's an experience. But
yeah, well, if you have PlayStation Plus, you have it. It's a bold choice for Sony to give this game away to so many millions of people.
Yeah.
But it's on PS4 and Vita, and I've mostly been playing on PS4, but I have really enjoyed it. I mean, this is the first time I've played it with a controller, because the PC version did not natively support controllers, and so playing with a keyboard I did not like as much. But my controller, it plays like a twin stick shooter, kind of.
Yep.
But there's a lot of kind of strategy to how you go through the game. There's, you know, you have limited resources and you sometimes have to make decisions on how to use them. And it's not unusual to decide to move on to the next floor and you can't go back to the one before. And sometimes you have to move on to the next floor before you unlock all the doors or go into all the rooms because maybe you would prefer to save that bomb for later for something else.
Yeah.
Or you want to save your money for something bigger and better later on. And that's a big risk. So you have to make these decisions constantly while you play the game.
Yeah, that's one of the things I liked too was that it didn't feel like the game was forcing you to do anything. Like it wasn't really forcing you to necessarily even figure any puzzles out. If you wanted to just kind of blow through and just go through as quickly as you wanted to, that was totally fine. You were never penalized. You never really missed anything. Well, you probably missed power-ups and stuff like that, but I mean, those are strictly optional. So,
and that's, they may or may not really be helpful in a given run.
Yeah.
You know, so you never really know. And sometimes they hurt you. Sometimes they make you worse.
Mm-hmm.
Or they might rebalance your character in a way that you don't like to play it that way. And you usually don't know what those things are before you pick them up.
You would never know what they really do anyways. It's just like you pick up a pill. Okay, I have no idea what this thing does. And then you take it and it does something really weird, like it makes you glow or something, and you still aren't totally sure what's going on.
Right.
So
you just have to experiment. It's a game that sort of encourages you to be bold, make big decisions, and just try different things. And if you die, whatever. You can go through it again. I mean, it doesn't take very long to play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't – and they do switch it up quite a bit by, you know, having it so, like, say, like, some enemies, you can only shoot them – like, there's some enemies where they put a rock in front of them, so you kind of have to strafe them. Like, you can't go up and shoot them head on. It's interesting that you can only shoot in one of the four directions.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So – and I don't know – I don't know if you have played this on Vita at all. But I actually preferred using the buttons, the face buttons, rather than the right stick to shoot. It just seemed to be, I don't know. It just seemed the right stick just seemed too squishy for this kind of shooter for some reason to me.
Hmm.
But
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak specifically about this game, but in general, I find that controlling shooters with the stick really only works if it's kind of like a. You know, kind of a situation where you're shooting literally in 360 degrees, and that's the way that you control what way you're shooting. In general,
yeah,
I would just rather use a button.
Yeah it seems
this is
like
more Robotron style.
It is, but it's but I see what James is getting at, because having like using a stick and using an analog
stick,
it's
not a digital event. You're not.
Yeah.
I am firing now. I am not firing now. If you're gonna do 360 style, I'm trying to think of a good example of a game that does it that everybody's gonna know right off the bat.
Or Geometry Wars.
Yeah. Then that's the way you handle it. But if you're just gonna say you're shooting, there's really no point.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
Even if it's you're shooting in multiple directions, like in Robotron, you're still only shooting in a handful of directions. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Spiraling.
Yeah, so it's almost easier just sort of just hit the four buttons because
it's absolutely easier.
You know, you're either shooting left or you're not shooting left. There's no, you know.
Right.
You can't even angle anything. There's nothing. It's not like an analog stick where you can angle it. So.
Yeah.
But.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. And it's good that they give you the option. I'll have to try it with the buttons. But
yeah.
I've played this a lot this week. I have found it very addictive and really fun. And it's a game that is chock full of mysteries. There's a lot of stuff that I'm doing in the game that I don't really understand. And I think, as you pointed out, thematically, it's problematic and it's confusing. And there's a lot of stuff in there that some people are not going to want to look at. Some people are going to find probably offensive. And I think that's the point.
Yeah.
That stuff doesn't bother me. I don't necessarily like it or dislike it. I find it curious, I suppose, in a lot of cases. But I think as an action game, it's, to me, so much fun. And once you kind of get in the groove of it, the excitement of picking up a new upgrade, even in like maybe the first level, that gives you laser tears. And so now you can shoot all the way across the level immediately as much as you want and just hold it down and continuously damage enemies. And it makes you so powerful. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just pick up a random combination of items that you're like, oh, this is going to be a good run. I'm going to follow this all the way through and go as far as I can because I might see something I've never seen before. Yeah. And that is so exciting.
Yeah, I also felt that the bosses were just hard enough where you might die once, but then when you beat them, you'll kind of just beat them. Depending on what, mm-hmm. again, depending on what your build is, I guess you
they have pretty
that,
simple but... patterns too. So when you've played them a couple times, a lot of times the bosses aren't as much of a threat as the unknown of walking into a new room and having no idea what's going to be there. The boss is actually one of the more predictable things that that you'll experience across multiple runs through the game.
Yep. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. So I really do hope this comes to 3DS. I think as a portable game, it makes a lot of sense because you can do a run in, you know, 10, 20 minutes, and it's very addictive. And I think the presentation is very simple. So I think it would look really good on a 3DS.
Yeah,
and
I think it's actually it's more suited to portable than PC for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. As a PC game, I think he put it on PC just because that was the easiest thing to do. But I never felt this game was very well suited to PC. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that they've put a lot of work into bringing this out to consoles and portables. And they added a lot of content. I don't know, you know, because the game, you only see a sampling of what's in the game every time you go through it. So I don't know how much they added. And I didn't play the PC version enough to really understand all the differences, but I've seen things in there that I'm pretty sure were not in the PC game at all. So I think they've done quite a bit of work on it, and I really like it. I would have paid for this probably on PS4 and Vita, so I was pleasantly surprised when I found out that it was going to be part of Plus, and I didn't have to. Because now's not a good time for me to be throwing around a bunch of money.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, speaking of, one game that I did throw some money into is Stealth Inc. 2. Which is a Wii U exclusive, at least for now. I doubt that will remain the case indefinitely.
But, we pretty much know it won't.
Yeah, but for now, it's a Wii U exclusive. And of course, it's a sequel to Stealth Inc., which didn't appear on Nintendo platforms at all. It was a PC and a PlayStation game. I played some Stealth Inc. because it was on PS Plus several months ago. And I was kind of curious about it. It's made by Curve, the guys who made Fluidity and Fluidity 2, and a few other. They've published a lot of things lately. They're kind of becoming kind of an indie publisher, so they're publishing a lot of indie games and helping port them to consoles and things like that. So it's a company that's doing a lot of things I really like. And the first Stealth Inc. didn't completely click with me. It was kind of interesting, but the puzzle. See, I think the first one was more stealthy. It was more about dodging cameras and lasers and things like that. And I found
being
that
stealthy.
Yeah, it's a lot of hiding in shadows. It does some dynamic lighting. Sometimes you can push blocks around and it changes the lighting and use that to hide from cameras. I found that stuff to be kind of squirrely and also just not that much fun. And Stealth Inc. 2 on the Wii U is much more of a puzzle platformer. It still has that stealth stuff in there, but that stuff, it's much less of a focus, I think, in the sequel. So far, it seems that way. And all these test chambers and things like that they throw you into mostly seem more about solving puzzles. And I found the puzzles to be really good. Not a big surprise coming from, you know, Fluidity team. Or at least some of the same people. But I have been really, really impressed with the variety of puzzles, the creativity, and the difficulty. This is a challenging game, and I've gotten very close to being stuck a couple of times. And one thing that's helped me get through it is that it has this crazy Miiverse Dark Souls feature where you can drop a comment anywhere in the game for other people to see. And already, even in the first couple weeks this is out, people are using this to kind of help others find secrets and help people get through, challenging sections of the game. And you have to push a button to read them. So if you don't want the hints, you can go through without reading them. And you certainly aren't it doesn't nag you to leave your own, although it makes it easy to do it. But I think it is one of the best uses of Miiverse I've ever seen. You know, it's similar to New Super Mario Bros. U. But in that game, you could only leave comments when the game prompted you to, and often it would prompt you to when you didn't really feel like it, and you could only read the comments on the world map. So a lot of times it was just, I got through this, yay, but there wasn't a whole lot of, and that's not a puzzle game really. So there's, you know, you don't necessarily need a lot of tips to play that game anyway. So it became more about bragging or complaining about levels. And in Stealthink 2, because it has some nasty puzzles in it, people really are trying to help each other. Some people are asking for help, but a lot of people are providing tips after they get through something. And I found it to be really nice. I think it's a pretty fantastic use of Miiverse, and it's very seamless. And they're just little green icons that show up in the game. And again, you can read it or not, but it's really, really well done. And so far, I have to say, I'm enjoying this game a hell of a lot. I like it much more than the first game from what little I played of that. I think this game has... they've shifted the focus of the gameplay in a good direction for me. It is quite different from the first one, even though it looks the same or looks very similar. But I think when you play it, you can feel the difference, and the level designs really have kind of a different priority, I think. The stealth, often you might go through a whole level where you really don't have to do any stealth at all. Like, all those features are still there, but you just don't have to worry about them. It's more about, how do I use these gadgets and how do I push these blocks around onto the switches to open up the gate so I can get to the end? And that stuff is really fun. And it's all in the context of a platformer. And your character can't do too much at first, but not too deep into the game. You start getting into these test chambers, and a lot of the metagame or the story and the style and the presentation is all very Portal-like. So you're kind of a generic clone running around in this facility that's full of test chambers. And there's, instead of like a GLaDOS style narrator who's talking to you vocally, instead there's these characters who are competing in some kind of leaderboard tournament. I don't really understand exactly what's going on with them, but at least the guy who's sort of guiding you, I guess, through the game, he's communicating to you with text that appears on the wall. And it's very stylishly done. Like, as you're running from left to right through a screen, you'll see some text appear on the wall, and he's sending you a message. And it's hard for me to tell. I can't really tell if he's supporting me or if he wants me to quit or what. There's some kind of complex relationship there that I don't really understand yet. But it's interesting, and it's very unintrusive, and it's nicely done. It certainly does not slow you down at all to go through the game. So, otherwise, there's some pantomime with other characters. You find other clones. Sometimes they're hidden in walls, and you're trying to rescue them and get them to the exit. But you can also play co-op locally, which I have not tried. It seems like it would be pretty – I think it would run pretty well. You know, of course, Portal 2 had co-op stuff. It had special levels for that. But that was a real challenge because you're in first person and you have all these portals, and so the spatial reasoning is just completely effed up, and you might be on completely different sides of the level, whereas this is a 2D platformer in presentation, and so I think it would be much easier to communicate as to what you want to do and to understand what's going on there. But sometimes the challenges are very much timed, and I think it would be very difficult to get two people through a sequence of things. And that kind of brings me to my only complaint so far is that some of the levels feel a bit trial and error based. It becomes almost like Super Meat Boy in some cases, where there'll be a moving platform and there's cameras and lasers all over the place, and you have to go through like a very specific sequence of stay on the left side, then stay on the right side, then throw your inflatable block over there to block that camera, and then, you know, like, and you have to do like five or six things exactly right in a row. And it's not necessarily that difficult to do, but you're going to die a bunch of times before you figure all that stuff out. And the game just seems to be totally okay with that. And you know, you have unlimited lives, and there's a lot of checkpoints, and it's not going to throw you back too far. But sometimes in a game that seems so deliberately designed, it's full of these great puzzles where you can really, I mean, there's a clock running, but there's no time limit. It's just it's a time trial thing. There are leaderboards after every level. But it's a game where you can spend your time and really think about things and kind of deliberately figure out how to get through the level. And then sometimes I'll throw in these sequences where it just feels like you just have to get through by brute force. Like, you're going to die 12 times. And there's probably not any way to avoid that, because you just can't react fast enough to some of the stuff happening. And that stuff I don't like as much. But it's a fairly small part of the game. Now, one of the things that the developers talked about in advance was the sort of Metroid-style overworld that links all these test chambers. The test chambers are usually about, you know, 5 minutes long the first time through. If you know exactly what to do, the leaderboard, the top of the leaderboards, you see people run through it in like 1 minute. Some of that stuff seems crazy to me, but, you know, I guess if you're really into speed running, it's possible to do. For me, I'm just interested in getting through it the first time. But those test chambers are arranged throughout this very large overworld. And you do have a good map on the gamepad. You're sort of guided through it through various ways. I guess there are upgrades. I didn't see this until just right before we recorded today. I got my first upgrade. And it makes a pretty big difference in how you can move around that overworld. And it lets you get to new places. It lets you go back to previous places and sort of find additional secrets that you might have missed before. But that stuff seems to be few and far between in the sense that, it's a gadget is what they call it in the game. And the first one I got is this inflatable block. You can throw it, around. You can make it inflate to activate switches or to bust through, certain kinds of tiles. And it's really clever. It's a really fun thing to use. And they have a lot of different uses for it. A lot of amazing puzzles designed around it. But they only let me use it in the test chambers. And so they sent me through a series of probably 15 or 20 test chambers where I learned to use this thing and all the different things you can do with it, including like this huge boost jump you can get off of it that really makes your character a lot more mobile. And it was only when I completed that pretty long sequence of test chambers learning how to use it that they finally gave me one to use on the overworld. And now I can really, you know, get around that place and look for a lot of other stuff. So it's an interesting setup, but so far I'm enjoying it quite a bit. And I think it's definitely recommendable. It's $15 on the eShop right now for Wii U, and it seems to have a ton of content. So I'm very happy with my purchase so far.
That's good, because, you know, for $15 you would expect quite a lengthy game, I think. I mean, something along
robust,
the lines like...
Yeah.
Like, you know, something along the lines like Shadow Complex, for example. Like, that's a pretty long game, $15. So.
Yeah, I think this game is probably longer even than Shadow Complex, but, you know, it has a somewhat different structure. But also, the presentation is so slick. I mean, these guys really know what they're doing. It is a very nice-looking game, very, very polished and well put together. And the music, by the way, is superb. It is a really fantastic soundtrack. So I think there's a ton to like about Stealth Inc. 2, and I'm excited to play more of it. It's probably going to keep me busy for a while.
Cool.
Nice.
All right, guys. Well, we have been going for a good while here, so why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll finish up new business, because there's even still a couple more games that some of us want to talk about. So stick around. We'll be back with more games, of course. Welcome back, everyone. We did not really finish new business, so we're going to try to do that now, and then we'll see what time is remaining for listener mail. But we did a lot of listener mail on the telethon last week, in addition to some live calls. So
like a whole effing hour of it.
Yeah. So if you've recently sent an email and you haven't heard it answered yet, you might want to check out the telethon right at the very beginning. We did cover a lot of them there. But we do still have a few in the bag that we will get to, if not now, then soon. But let's kick off this second segment with some follow-up from Guillaume on a game that we talked about a couple weeks ago, the last time we did a normal episode.
Yeah, I've been pretty quiet on this episode so far because I'm pretty damn tired. And I can attribute that directly to Fantasy Life, because I've been going to bed at like 1 a.m. every night during weekdays, because I've just been addicted. Like we've talked briefly about kind of the loop of gameplay that's in Fantasy Life when you switch from jobs to jobs, but basically, like, you've got jobs where you gather stuff, you've got jobs where you craft things, and then you've got, you know, combat roles. And so all these feed into each other, right? Like you gather materials, you craft some weapons and some tools, and then you go kill enemies. And with these enemies yield you things that you can craft better tools with to better gather materials, and so on and so forth. And so there's each of the lives, which is what they call the jobs in the game, has its own missions, basically. Like in this area, you should like kill these owls or whatever as a hunter. And so these never change. These are the only way, doing these missions, is the only way that you're going to level up specific jobs. And leveling up a specific job will give you access to, again, like make you able to use more weapons, will improve key stats for that specific job. And anyway, it's just like this infernal loop of you trying to finish one more mission and, oh shit, like to finish this mission, I gotta craft this item, but I don't have the materials. And then you realize, oh crap, I can't gather these materials because I haven't finished these missions for that job. So, yeah, like a lot of bad decisions on my part, just like, okay, I can finish this before going to bed. But it ends up taking me like a couple of hours because to finish that one thing, I got to finish everything.
Well, if you're not sleeping well, I know a company who might have just the thing for you.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's a weird timing. But so I've really been enjoying this despite, you know, my kind of tired and I don't know, like the way that I'm analyzing it. Like it is kind of, it does give me like this endorphin release. I'm really enjoying the game. But anyway, I've also been trying out the multiplayer. And originally when the multiplayer was announced, that was one of the reasons why I was even interested in the game in the first place. Unfortunately, it's not really the kind of the Secret of Mana experience that I was hoping it would be. You know, I was hoping that both Karen and I could buy this game and then just go through the story together. It doesn't really work that way. The story really is boring, as James correctly described. You're just delivering letters.
Yeah, you here fight and there. Nothing. Occasionally you fight like a wolf, like a random ass wolf just hanging out.
Right. But it's really, the story is not the strong suit of this game. But it does gate your progress. You cannot go to most areas before you've completed the, you know, a certain chapter of the story. So that's kind of annoying. When you're playing multiplayer, you cannot finish any sort of story missions at all. And you cannot switch out of your current life that, you know, that you were in when you started the multiplayer mode. So you're very limited in what you can do. But again, like last night, I was playing with someone who was of a much lower level than I was. So I was mostly helping him accomplish stuff.
This was online?
Yeah, this was online.
Is there any communication feature?
Well, yeah, like there's basically this, you know, keyboard that's not QWERTY, you know, it's just alphabetical.
I wanted to hear how you describe this, because I was going to say, there's a keyboard, it's shit.
Yeah, it is shit, you know, it's alphabetical, and I know that ordinarily, like, you would think, well, it's not a problem, it's alphabetical,
it's a
we all
problem.
Know that.
I mean, yeah, that's cool between if it's a high score table.
Yeah, O is going to be between N and P, right? But in this case, you know, like you've got muscle memory when you type on a keyboard, so it really would be good to have the option, because I'm just like to type a, what, like 12 letter message, which is basically the only thing that this game allows, 12 letters. You cannot use big words. It's just,
or,
it takes forever.
Or multiple words.
Yeah.
This is
advantageous. God damn
this
it.
Is a level five. This is a level five sort of. This game to me. This game is level five. The game. I mean, it is everything taken to the most extreme that level five can do something in a way that is their way of doing things. And this goes down to like in the precursor to this game, the Little London that you could play, the London Life. You can only name your town like six characters. Fuck you. So
you can call it London, but nothing.
So the joke I had with mine, which brought much amusement to the handful of people who ever saw it, was that I tried to call it Little London, you know, what the game calls it, and you couldn't fit that in there. So all you got was Lund, because that was all that. So yeah, it's the fact it's 12 characters, and I got to that. I was like, yep, level 5. They're all up in this.
Yeah. So the messaging was kind of a nightmare. It would take, you know, you would see the other guy's character with the little bubble that indicates he's typing something, and you wait for about a minute before it says like take, you know. It's shit. So it's really shit.
My third message was get Skype.
Probably a good idea. Yeah, like after, like we had fun playing it online, but after that we were like, well, maybe we should have planned better, because this was really not a good experience in terms of communicating and collaborating. Mostly what was happening was that because I was much further in the game than he was, I was leading, you know, like he was following me around, and I was trying to lead him to areas that he could tackle. And I was trying not to kill the enemies too fast because I was way over leveled. And still, even though you can progress the story missions and you can switch out of the current life that you're in, you can still accomplish missions to level up those lives. So I'm sure that after he logged out of the multiplayer game, he was probably able to go talk to the masters of these different lives. And like, just like, okay, just like level up like 3-4 levels in one go. So it must have been great for him, but for me, like, it was just, okay, I'm just revisiting areas of the game I've already seen that I've already gone through by myself, and I'm helping out someone. So it was fun, but it was not, like, there was not much, in there for me, you know?
Classic problem with online RPGs.
Yeah. I could have, if I had known, I would have switched out from my archer, which I've been using as my combat class for pretty much the whole game, and I would have tried to further another life. But, you know, I didn't. And it's kind of unlikely, I think, at this point that I'm going to try the multiplayer again. Like, I really don't see the point, and it's not going to happen that Karen is going to get this game and we're going to play together, because it's just not what we're looking for.
My takeaway on Fantasy Life was I played with another mage. And as opposed to one person running around shooting the really super powerful bosses you can't hurt, like they just take almost no damage, and they can't hurt you because their attack patterns are pathetic. And so there are these bosses called wraiths that are part of the mage quests that you have to kill, and they're you know deep into the mage like you've already reached expert or master, and you're still not really the top level. But I tried to fight one just for how long I could keep it up. 2 TV shows later, I was still going, only half paying attention. And I had only done about 1/4 of his damage.
Why wouldn't you just leave?
So, because it was an experiment. And I, like I said, I was barely paying any attention whatsoever at that point, because these attack patterns are so predictable. It was just run in, shoot, run out.
Is this because
you
hadn't grinded up enough, or what?
I'm pretty fucking high level. He's just really strong. So as opposed to it being that, it was 2 of us running in, shoot, run out, run in, shoot, run out, and we still weren't making any progress. Like, I thought the game was like, okay, if you bring in somebody else, this is going to get a lot easier. And that was their, hey, you should try it with other people. No happenings.
The kind of the ways that you level, you do level your specific classes, but you can also level up your base stats. And I do find it hard, like you said last week, that the combat was really easy, but I'm really not finding it to be the case. I find that in most new areas, you know, once I further the story a little bit, every time I'm in a newer area, I'm kind of struggling. And I think it's because I'm trying to be a jack of all trades.
Well, and but that sounds like the way you would expect in an RPG.
Right.
You know, when you get to a new area, it's going to be a challenge, and you have to kind of work at it and grind a little bit, or buy new equipment or do something a little bit different to survive in this more challenging area.
And equipment's kind of a funny thing in this game, because there's not really much good equipment for sale, the implication being you're going to make it yourself. Mm-hmm. But by and large, they ain't shit to buy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I think the equipment is what will affect your stats the most. You know, like leveling your base stats more or less effective because you can only upgrade like 2 points per level that you gain. So you have to assign 2 points to your vitality, strength, and like whatever. There are like 6 stats or 7. So it really doesn't make that much of a difference when you level up. But when you get a new item, that's when you boost your attack by like 10 or 20 points, you know? And that's one of the things that I like about the crafting in the game. It really does make a difference because you might think, well, why would I craft items that I can just go buy at this store? And it's when you do really well at the crafting, at the mini games, you can create superior quality items, which will have much better stats. So,
see, I think that was a miss by the game, though, because it's basically saying, well, you can play as any class you want. You can have any – I mean, the promo is pick a life, any life you want, and then it should say in caveat, but you really need to focus on crafting because otherwise you're just going to be stuck with garbage.
No, but I think that the game does tell you can switch out at any time. So I don't think the game is telling you choose a life and stick with it.
No, that's actually – you're wrong. The promotional material says choose a life, any life you want. And it's actually in the commercial. So, no, you're functionally wrong on that statement.
But the game is not like that. Well, I haven't seen the commercial.
That campaign may have been set up by people who had nothing to do with making
the
game. But
my point is that unless they're saying you really need to work on the crafting stuff, there should be more opportunity to get gear. Because I mean, I use the same gear like 2/3 of the game's main plot because that was still the best gear available to me.
Right. But I really do think I think it's not a coincidence that I'm playing the game the way I'm playing and I'm enjoying it, and you're playing it sticking with one life and not really enjoying it. I do think that the game does make it really easy for you to just go and start all the lives right at the beginning. You know, at the beginning of the game, when you choose the first life, you go through this long tutorial where it basically explains everything to you. It's very wordy, as this game always is. But then when you choose another class, it just tells you, do you want to go through this introductory chapter or no? And you can just say no. And so that's it. You're done. You level up one level for that class without doing anything. You get all the same rewards that you would have gotten from doing it. And like, there you go. You're proficient enough to do this. And you can switch at any time if you come back to this, to talk to this guy. So, no, I really enjoy it. The game is not perfect, but the way I'm really enjoying it. It reminds me a lot of Dragon Quest IX. I kind of got addicted to the whole alchemy thing. And I really do think that this is kind of Dragon Quest IX alchemy, the game. You know, they've improved some things too, and they've made the combat real time, less of focus on it. But it's very much that kind of... go gather stuff that you will need to craft these items that you
this
will need to kill these
things.
This is
the first thing either of you has said that remotely interests me in Fantasy Life, when you call it Dragon Quest IX Alchemy the game. Because that feature of Dragon Quest IX became a real problem for my life for a couple of months. I'm not sure I'm eager to go back to that well of depravity. Of grinding and just teleporting around everywhere to gather up materials from the world as they respawn every couple days. But
well, that's the thing though. That's one of the improvements that they've made in Dragon Quest IX. It was very much, well, there you can find these things at this spot, and once you've gathered everything at this spot, then you have to wait like a couple of in-game days, and then it reappears. And there was a very low chance that you would get the items that you wanted if they were rare, you know. But in Fantasy Life, you've got the luck statistics, which I've been constantly putting my points into when I level up. And I do think that it makes that process easier. And if you want stuff to respawn in an area, you just leave it and then you come back. And that's it. And sometimes you don't even need to leave it. Like the night will change today, or, you know, vice versa, and new enemies will spawn. New resources will spawn. So they do make it easier. And most of the resources that you need, you can also buy. So.
You know, one day we should have a discussion about luck stats in RPGs, because the whole idea is so absurd and nauseating to me that you can upgrade your luck. A game that is intensely deterministic. I mean, it is literally, you know, comparing numbers against each other would even have something like that. I mean, the luck statistic, of course, is really just a weighting factor to so when it does random dice roll type things in the background, it starts to weigh one direction or the other more in your favor. But that is not luck. That is
They're not going to call it determinism weighting.
I'm just saying, in the case of if you're role playing,
we're not describing a fucking finite state automata here. We're just describing a game. Come on, you got to do something.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably much better names that you could apply to that concept. And I think calling it luck is really disingenuous. And I think it's only done just because of tradition, because it's been luck since Dungeons and Dragons 40 years ago. And they still call it luck. But it has nothing to do with luck. And the idea that you can grind to build up your luck the way that you can your strength or your stamina or your intelligence is so ludicrous. I just can't stand it. Conceptually, it drives me crazy.
I agree. I dislike the luck statistic and like something like the Metroidvania games. I don't mind it so much here.
In a lot of games too, because you have to have like a really high luck to ever find any of the good stuff.
Right. In this game, though, it's kind of like your catch-all stat, and that makes it a little bit more acceptable, I guess. Like apparently it improves everything. Like not only the item drops, but also the critical hits that you get in combat, and it also affects the crafting in ways that I don't understand. But the game flat out told me, improve your luck stat to craft better items. So I don't know. I've been putting most of my points in there, and it's worked out well.
Sounds like one stat to rule them all.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, at least the game tells you that. It's not something you have to learn from a FAQ.
Right. Where
someone has, like, hacked it and like, looked into all the RNG formulations and figured out, you know, that's like how people figured out EVs in Pokemon is, you know, they basically had to hack the game to even figure out how any of that shit even works.
That's so ridiculous. So
if you're going to have all these crazy number systems, at least make it transparent so the player can choose how to guide their character development.
I would then go to the opposite position and say, okay, but then having all these classes that require specialization really does become problematic then. Because as Guillaume points out, you only get 2 points to spend every time you level up.
Yeah, I hope that's going to change because...
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Oh, boy. It really, like, so it seems like it's impossible to max out your stats.
Probably. So I
that,
mean, I've been...
that I'm okay with because I like the idea that they force you to actually make long-lasting decisions about that stuff and commit to...
Yeah,
developing your character in one way or the other.
But then the idea that you're supposed to be bouncing between classes becomes difficult because if you're a mage and you're not dumping stats into intelligence, you're fucking wasted. You're pointless.
Then again, the game does allow you to cook or do alchemy that will basically make some drugs that will boost your stats. Or you can make equipment that's going to boost some stats. So I guess they're expecting you to play with that and to not max out your base stats yourself, but maybe kind of switch equipment when you need it.
Hmm. Yeah, well, in that case, I have some rap songs that you might find useful in your fantasy life playthrough.
I feel like
they'll teach you all you need to know.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Well, I continue to be fascinated by the two very different experiences you guys are having with it, but I'm also pretty damn sure I don't want to play Fantasy Life. So
you hate both experiences.
I just – no, there's just something about even with this dichotomy, I feel like I wouldn't fall either direction. I think I would end up somewhere in the middle and be just sort of miserable with it and have ended up putting 100 hours into it and – not necessarily enjoyed myself very much. So I'm fine skipping this one, but I'm glad at least one of you is enjoying it. And a lot of people are enjoying it. So I'm glad to hear that. But John, I'm interested in hearing what else you've been playing lately.
Well, Johnny, this is one of those games where I debate whether or not I even bring it up on this podcast.
No, just don't. Let's roll on.
I openly
asked you to.
Yeah, Johnny asked me to. So
World of Warcraft. Let's start talking.
Once again, I actually just did. But once again, of course, you know,
that's why
you know,
I brought it up.
As I like to say, I'm not a Halo fan. as I like to say.
I just went out and bought the collection on like day fucking one.
But let me tell you,
so I can experience the 75-hour day one patch.
Let me tell you, I shined up the cat helmet, and I got Halo, the Master Chief
Collection.
Don't
use that phrase, Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, so it's a whole lot of Halo.
There's your episode title, Shining Up the Cat Helmet. It's a whole lot of Halo.
If you,
I don't think that's going to be the title of our Nintendo podcast.
If you want some Halo, they got some Halo for you. Again, this comes with the big caveat and asterisk. If you are a Halo fan, it's tough to go wrong. I mean, it's just even as a remake, it's not a remake, but like a collection sort of thing. I mean, the only truly new content here is Halo 2 being redone. Mm-hmm. Like they did the same thing to Halo with the Anniversary Edition on 360.
This includes the remake that they already did for the first Halo, right?
Correct, yeah.
So you get that, and you get the remake of Halo 2, and then you get, I guess, basically up-resed versions of Halo 3 and 4, but those were already in HD on the 360.
Correct, yep, exactly it. And you get all of the multiplayer maps for all of those games. So there's like 102, I think it is, multiplayer maps.
So all the DLC packs and stuff too.
Everything, and they've also I went through and they've unlocked also a lot. Like, because the thing is, in a lot of these games, like in Halo 4, you can you can unlock different kind of like armor skins and stuff like that, and a lot of that stuff is unlocked right from the beginning. So it's a staggering amount of content, because I mean, you can play through all of the games, the campaigns, you can do it. Single player and co-op, you can play, you can play it easy, normal, hard, extra hard. I mean, you could just spend a lot of time, digging into this game if you want to play through everything.
It's so, four games in one.
It really is. I mean, it is literally, like 15 years of content crammed into one game. So, yeah. I mean, it's, and the games... 15, yeah. Yeah, and I mean the games still hold up. I mean, they're just, they still play really well, and I'm sure for a lot of people Halo 2 was kind of the pinnacle of the series for them. So
well,
having that back
for the multiplayer, cuz that was the first one that was online, and I don't know for sure, but I've always got the sense that that was probably the peak of Halo's popularity online, and a lot of people felt that was their favorite one to play online, more than 3 or certainly more than 4. The fact that they remade that and now you can play it on your Xbox One with, modern friends listing and all that stuff.
That must
be exciting for the fan base.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's like I was like, why would you really you could say what is really the big deal about this, because all of these games have been released. But that is really exactly it, is the fact that you can take these games that were made, 10, 15 years ago. And you can play them on up to date Xbox Live with all of that kind of stuff when it works, and it's really amazing. It's kind of like sort of a dream scenario. I mean, like all those, like I always think of older games that, man, I wish you could play them online, like that they would be updated, and that's exactly what 343 has done. They've taken these games that you always wish you could do some of the stuff that you couldn't do 10 years ago, but now you can with these updated games. So,
And I think the big buzz around this, and the reason people wanted it so bad, is because Halo 2 stopped working a couple years ago and they turned off the original Xbox Live servers in order to make some upgrades to the 360 service, because they said they were being held back by compatibility with the original Xbox. So they turned that off, because you remember the stories about the guys who kept the servers running for like 5 days afterward, because they started a game and they just wouldn't turn it off. And then, so you haven't been able to play Halo 2 online, even on the original system, for the last couple of years. Yep. And the other thing is, I don't think they ever released Halo 2 on PC the way they did the first
one.
So there's not even a way to independently set up online matches the way that you could for the first Halo, because that one at least had an official PC release.
Yep. Yeah, so there's a lot of hype. So definitely Halo 2 is the real drawing point for this one.
Does it look good?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't played Halo 2 yet. I mean, the original Halo looks pretty good. It's a little bit glitchy, because I'm going to go through them front to back sequentially. play all the way through, and it's going to be kind of a side project. But yeah, I mean, it's a little bit glitchy. I know in the first one, it's you know, enemies, you know, you'll blow them up. You know, there's a lot of grenade play. I mean, I'm playing through, you know, because I've beaten it already. I'm taking it to the streets, and I'm playing it through on Legendary, of course, which is just fucking brutal. It's hard, very, very hard, to the point where it's just really like every encounter with enemies, you pretty much have to sit there and just pick away at them kind of thing. But hey, it's the hardest. What do you expect? It's the hardest way to play it, right? So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of, because of that, there's a lot of grenade play. So, you know, sometimes, like, I mean, enemies are bullet sponges. So a lot of times the most efficient way to kill them is by hitting them with plasma grenades. And of course, because of that, there's a lot of grenade play, and a lot of it's in hallways. So, you know, so enemies sometimes get stuck in walls and kind of goofy stuff like that, but still looks good. Halo 2, I was watching some Twitch footage of it, and it looks good. I mean, it doesn't look amazing. You know, like, it's, you can tell it's a kind of an older engine sort of thing, like, you know, because what the cool thing you can do is while you're playing, you can switch from the original graphics to the new graphics. You can go back and forth because they have both engines running at the same time.
Yeah, you just push a button and it like instantly switches. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's neat. I would describe it as a neat product. It might not be for everybody, but you have to at least admire the amount of work that they did to just not make this just a bullshit, get this out the door kind of thing.
So it doesn't, you don't walk away feeling like this is Halo 5 isn't ready, so let's do this.
Oh, no, no way, man. There's way too much content in this. There's just way too much stuff that they did. I mean, and also, there's a lot of stuff that they put in there. Like, you can, first off, it has like all of like the forge modes and all that kind of stuff. Like, any of that stuff that they easily could have just said, oh yeah, well, for technical reasons, we couldn't include Forge mode from Halo 3, you know, where you, like, make your own multiplayer maps. All that stuff is in there. And you can also, they've set up separate playlists for kind of themes across all of the maps for all of the games. So, if, you know, they might have a playlist that's, like, all of the vehicle-based maps from all the games, or, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Like, they haven't just, you know, taken these four games, ported them over, up-res them, and slapped them on a disc. Like, they've actually put them all down and thought, okay, with all of this content, what are the cool things that we can do within these parameters with this content? It's just really, really well done. The UI is really good. It's just really, it's a really nice package. So,
well, but James, I mean, just to take your question seriously for a sec, yeah, this is the second Christmas that the Xbox One's on the marketplace, and they wanted to have a Halo
game. I mean,
why this package exists, but you can also see the appeal, and they're prepping Halo 5, and they're about to do a beta that you get access to if you buy this thing.
Yep.
But to have all of those, it's not every Halo game ever, but to have the four most well-known popular Halo games updated and now all playable on the new platform, and then you're going to add 5 to them next year, it does a lot to sort of establish that platform as the home of Halo, which up to this point, the only thing is that weird twin stick thing. You know, other than that, I don't think there's a single Halo game on the system before this. So I think for Microsoft, it's very important.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, because, you know,
same reason
all those...
Wind Waker HD is out on Wii U, by the way.
Yep. It's like, you know, it's having that player base fragmented, you know, across, and it's just not good.
John, the reason I wanted you to talk about this, because I was curious, I am interested, if I get a job soon, since they've dropped the price on Xbox One recently, and I could get a bundle with something like Sunset Overdrive, which sounds really cool. It's been getting great reviews, and that sounds really fun for me. That is something I'm in the market for if things work out in the next couple of months. And because I got into Halo with Reach, which is one of the last games on the 360.
Yeah.
So I've never played 1, 2, or 3. I played 4, and I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. But I'm very curious to go back and play the first 3. So, like, you know, if all this – there's so much content in here that would be brand new to me, and the fact that you get just this avalanche of stuff for the price of one game is very appealing for me.
Yeah, and, you know, you can play through – that's one of the cool things too, is that you can play online co-op in all of these games. So
you could be my Sherpa through this stuff.
Indeed, I could.
Or John, right now. You could lead him into an area in Legendary and then just leave him to die.
Oh, I will not be playing these games on Legendary.
I encourage the second option.
Yeah. I mean, they've been having their problems with online. You know, it's your typical kind of launch day woes. But the thing is, that's the thing. Like with this game, I can give them a pass on it because they're trying to do so much crazy shit with it online. Whereas like something like Battlefield 4, oh wow, doesn't work.
Well,
amazing.
Hey, yeah, John. EA. To be fair,
it's like
Battlefield 4 still doesn't work. So.
Yeah,
it's only been a year.
Yeah,
give it some time.
And EA's like, but with EA, it's not like that's ever happened to any of their other online games. So what other experience would they have to learn from?
Man, EA really needs a good 2015. That's all I can say. Because publisher has lost so much cachet, even with the fans who really like their stuff. I mean, I think other than Madden and FIFA right now, they've poisoned almost every franchise.
Even
that
ones
they have.
They, so like, mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about it before, but like Dragon Age 2 came in like after one game. And it's like, nah, it's not gonna be about it. It's gonna be about a town. Fuck you.
Well, yeah. Actually, to be fair, the early reviews on the new Dragon Age are really good.
They dialed back a lot of like, hey, we're gonna make this about one town. It's like they made this. Yeah.
They dialed it up.
Yeah,
really.
they took the lessons from, hey, this isn't what we wanted.
Yeah. They need a real turnaround, though. They've had a series of debacles going back to Mass Effect 3 and even before that. I mean, it's been two or 3 years of like really, really bad launch releases and, you know, the SimCity stuff. It's just I don't even know how many people even played SimCity, but the news was you
even,
get away
even
from
things
it.
Like the it, Sims the recently where they're like, oh, we're not going to have babies in pools. Too hard. It's like, fuck yeah, it's game one. Sims 1.
Yeah.
And then they announced, hey, we're putting in pools in the next content pack. Aren't you guys happy? No, fuck you.
Yeah.
No, fuck you. Stop talking. Just... Fuck you. It's just like, Jesus Christ, EA.
Well, they've got the new Dragon Age. They've got a new Mass Effect coming probably next year. And they've got the new Mirror's Edge, which is supposedly still coming at some point. So if those three all turn out really good, I think that would go a long way for them. And, you know, they've done some smart things. Like, they did delay the Battlefield Hardline after some really, really negative reports out of E3.
And that demo. And
under the
presumption
that they are taking more time to make that game better.
So that
and
one's...
Maybe that works out for them, and that would be, I think, a hardline cap.
Hardline had two problems. One, they're showing this Hardline. They had that Hardline public beta when Battlefield 4 was still fucking broken. 6 months after it came out. And two, it was reusing assets from Battlefield 4, the broken game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't show
get your house in
you can't
order.
You can't show that to the hey, remember that game that we just fucking let you buy $60 and then we just ignored? We're gonna reuse the assets in this new game. Your game's fucking toast. Like you just, you need to make right.
We probably shouldn't go overboard on EA right now because they don't make Nintendo games anymore.
Yeah. So, but I mean
they're pretty much irrelevant to us nowadays.
Yeah, but definitely to your point, Johnny.
To me.
definitely, if you're remotely interested in trying any of those Halo games, Master Chief Collection is the way to go. I mean,
it sounds like a great deal.
It's hard to argue
with the value there. So, I'm very keen on it. If I do end up getting an Xbox here pretty soon, then if you want a game to play on your new system, you can't go wrong with that. I mean, there's just so much content to it. So. That's why it's appealing to me. But let's move on, and I'll talk about a Nintendo game, a very Nintendo game, because I finally caught up with Kirby Triple Deluxe, and I had been talking for a while about my plan, my evil plan to buy my niece a 2DS for Christmas, which I have done now. She doesn't have it yet, but I bought with it and it comes with a download code for Mario Kart 7, so I figured... she'll get some mileage out of that. I think she'll enjoy that. And I can bring my 3DS and we could even play together wirelessly, which might be an interesting experience with a 4-year-old.
Run her off the track!
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. It may be too chaotic for her, but we'll try it. I wanted to get her Kirby because I think this is a game that I can play through with her, you know, over her shoulder. She can learn to use. She's 4 years old. She's grown up in the age of tablets and smartphones. So she knows how to use a touchscreen. She knows how to use a TV remote, of course. But she's never had a video game system with buttons and joysticks and things like that. So I think Kirby will be a pretty smooth, you know, entryway for her to learn that stuff. And it's a very cute game. It's a game that I think she'll like the presentation of, and it's a game that I wouldn't be bored out of my mind playing with her. So that's another advantage. But since it's going to be still a couple of weeks before I see her at Thanksgiving, and I think I'm going to give it to her early for Thanksgiving. I figured, well, I might as well just go ahead and play it, because with her, I probably won't get through more than a few levels. You know, I mean, it's going to be a challenge for her, and it'll take her a lot of practice to get better at it and to make some real progress. And I thought, well, I really want to see this game for myself. And so I've been playing through it early, and I really, really, really like this Kirby game. You know, I've been pretty critical of a lot of the series. There's only a couple of them that I hold in really high esteem. And mostly it's the side games. It's stuff like Epic Yarn, mostly for aesthetic reasons. I really like that game. Of course, Canvas Curse is one of the most interesting mechanically, but it also plays nothing like a Kirby game. And I like Amazing Mirror, but the structure of that game is so, you know, incredibly nonlinear and totally different than any other Kirby game that it's also kind of its own beast. And it was made by Flagship at Capcom. So it's not even really, in the family tree of other Kirby games. And Kirby Triple Deluxe is much more traditional, I would say, in the structure of it. But to me, it feels so much tighter. It is much more, the level designs seem a lot more thought out to me in this game. And it helps that there's a complexity to these levels that you don't see in other Kirby games, because the game relies so much on the foreground and background mechanic that you've seen in other 3DS games, for instance. But as you play through the level, you'll see enemies and platforms and stuff in the background, and you find a certain star that will flip you back there. And sometimes you go back there and you run around and do certain things, and maybe they affect the foreground, and then you flip back to the foreground. And they use this as a way for traversal, sometimes for puzzle solving. There's actual puzzles in this game, which I've never seen in a Kirby platformer before. And I don't just mean, well, I don't just mean you need to have the UFO power before you go in this level, or else you won't be able to get that secret thing. I mean, there are things that you need to manipulate in the level in order to open up a door or to uncover a key that you need to get to a secret place. I mean, it's, to me, much more traditional. It's not Mario style, maybe a little bit like Super Mario World, maybe, in terms of the kind of puzzles that are built into the levels, but it's not like anything I've done in another Kirby game.
Crystal Shard has some of that on the 64.
A little bit, and I do like that one more than most Kirby games.
It'll do stuff like you have to mix powers in a certain way to get some kind of secret.
Yeah, yeah. This one is much, in general, I feel like most of the stuff I've seen in Triple Deluxe, you can kind of just use whatever power you like the best. And there are some really good new ones that, and they've done, I think, some smart things about combining powers that have been around for a really long time. And they've taken a couple that are maybe not as interesting, and they've combined them, like fire and burning used to be two separate powers. Now they've combined them. Mm-hmm. So depending on how you use the controls, you can use all the powers that you used to have for each one of those, but now you only have to pick up one thing and you can do all of it. And so the move sets generally, you know how people always like things like sword and fighter because they have the most complex move sets, and now they're pretty much all that way. So and most of the puzzles rely more on aspects of the level themselves. I mean, there's a couple things there might be a fuse that you have to have a fire ability to light it, or some grass that you need to have some way of cutting it. Although usually there's more than one power that can do that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the puzzles rely on switches or different things that you pick up nearby or whatever, just doing things in a certain sequence. And you can have whatever power you prefer playing. And so I'm kind of switching up powers as I go, but it's mostly just, I feel like using something different for this level. And I don't have to worry so much about, am I doing this correctly? It's more fun. You know, you can just kind of play the way you want. You can enjoy yourself. And the game, I have to say, this is probably the most challenging Kirby game I've ever played. And not just on the second playthrough or, you know, with another character or when you're looking for the secret things. I think there are secret things that are, to me, are more fun. They're sunstones. There's three or four hidden in every level. And to me, those are generally more fun to find than the secrets in other Kirby games. but also just getting through the level and even fighting the bosses is, to me, considerably more challenging than in most Kirby games. And I've lost a lot of lives playing it, even just by myself. Now, I've gained a lot of lives, too. It's not hard to get lives. And when you run out of lives, it probably doesn't mean anything. You probably just go back to the beginning of the level. So I don't think the lives are really very meaningful. But this game, you have to be pretty careful about how you play it sometimes. And some of the combat situations with the bosses are pretty tough. And, you know, there may be powers that you can take into that boss fight that will do you no good. And you may really need to think about whether you should be trying to fight the gorilla boss with the leaf power up. Maybe that's not a good matchup and you should just give up on it and just try to suck up the stars. So I've been very impressed. To me, this feels like a real evolution of the Kirby series. I mean, it still plays like Kirby. In broad strokes, it feels like a very traditional Kirby game. But to me, it feels tighter. It looks way better than any other Kirby game. And it also has the sections that Guillaume and Josh Hillier also talked about with the hyper, what do you call it? The hypernova? When you eat this special fruit that lets you suck in giant objects, it just gives you this crazy suction power. Right. And when I saw that in Nintendo Directs and when I heard you guys talking about it, maybe I wasn't listening.
It sounded gimmicky, right? It looks gimmicky. You're like, what does that add? It's a win button? Like, isn't that Kirby already?
Yeah. Well, and what I was concerned about is that it was like the giant mushroom in New Super Mario Brothers, which is basically just a star. You know, it's basically just you're invincible. Nothing can top you. It's timed. Once it runs out, you go back. And maybe there's a couple puzzle things you can do with that, but not very many. And it's really simple. And the interesting thing about the hyper suction in Triple Deluxe is that you get it at very specific times. You can't miss it. And you can't skip it. It is, you get to us, and it's not in every level either, but there's just certain levels, usually right before the boss, where you're going to find it halfway through. And once you do, combat is a non-issue through the rest of that level. That level is no longer about combat because you can suck up any enemy that gets even remotely close to you. There's nothing they can do about it. They'll give you a few just to make you feel powerful, but that's not the goal anymore. Because what happens is the rest of that level is going to be a series of puzzles. And you solve the puzzles by using that power. So you're dragging giant blocks over and making them fall down, or you're lifting up a big spiked ball and then dropping it and blasting through. And some of these puzzles are really clever, and the solution is not always super obvious. And you have to use this suction ability in some interesting ways. And sometimes you have to be in certain positions that are hard to get to in order to get the big object that you need in order to solve the puzzle. So it's a very thoughtful use of something that I thought was going to be really gimmicky and just kind of cheap and like would look cool, but it's not actually that much fun to do. And it turns out those are some of my favorite parts of the game. So it has been a very pleasant surprise, and I'm enjoying it immensely so far. I think it actually makes me a little bit concerned that this might be too difficult for her, just because this will be her first sort of traditional video game with a D-pad and buttons. But I think even if she can only play the first few levels, that she'll probably enjoy that still, and she'll probably play it a lot. So hopefully that'll turn out okay. Maybe she'll just get really good at it. Maybe she'll be persistent like kids tend to be, and learn to master it. But it's been wonderful for me to play through because it is exactly the way I would want Kirby to go. And I'm kind of surprised that they took it that far in that direction, but I'm really, really happy with it. I think this is going to be one of my favorite games of the year. And it's a game that I know a lot of people skip that came out at a terrible time. And if you like Kirby at all, if you've ever wished Kirby was a little more technical, a little more thought-provoking, a little more challenging, I think you will get a big kick out of this. And by the 3D effect, by the way, is glorious. It'll be a shame that my niece won't be able to play that with that on her 2DS, but you know, the game, it builds 3D perspective shifting into the game, into the design of the game. You don't have to have the effect in order to play that stuff, but because it's baked into the level design, the game just is rife with opportunities for them to make things come out of the screen or to show things in the background. And so it's not just like every now and then something really cool happens in 3D. It's constantly, and it looks so great. So I'm a big fan of Kirby Triple Deluxe. Very happy with it.
Awesome. Well, hopefully someone will listen to you. And, you know, whereas they didn't really listen to the undiscerning Kirby lover.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, Guillaume likes a Kirby game? Wow, what a surprise.
Whatever, must be a Tuesday.
Yep.
Well, of course, your praise for it, Guillaume, is part of the reason that I was interested in it in the first place, because a lot of Kirby games I just skip. You know, I didn't play the last one on Wii, although I'm...
Right.
This makes me wonder if maybe that's worth going back to, if that was sort of a stepping stone to this new direction. But, but yeah, I mean, you're the one who convinced me, you and a couple other people maybe, or who convinced me that this one might be different and worth checking out. And it is different. You can feel it when you play it. This is a new kind of Kirby. So I'm thrilled about it. Okay. Well, we have gone through so much new business this week that we're going to have to end the show without doing some listener mail. So we'll try to catch up on those next time. And before we go, I did want to remind everybody to send in more emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We do always appreciate it, and we will get back to them. I promise you that. Also wanted to remind everybody that the Famicast is now on its own subscription feed. So if you enjoy the Famicast, and I'm sure that you do, I know I do, they are going to a bi-weekly schedule, which is good news for everybody, because there's, you know, Captain Toad just came out in Japan this week, and it's going to be quite a while before it comes out anywhere else. So if you want to get the latest impressions and the latest news on things like new 3DS and Captain Toad and various other awesome things that are out in Japan and not out in English-speaking territories, you should check out the Famicast. It is on iTunes. It is on our website, NintendoWorldReport.com. You can find it. And if you want to keep listening to it, you need to subscribe to that or download the files separately, because they will not appear on RFN going forward. But we are big fans of those guys and big friends, and we want you to listen to them. So be sure that you go do that. One more thing, in addition to all the telethon recordings that have been coming out throughout the week, which you should have all of them now, all 10 hours, I also got around to a project that I had been wanting to do for a couple of months now, which was to go back and fix the RFN 400 file. As I've kind of mentioned before, I sort of did that edit in a hurry while these three guys were still in my apartment playing games, playing Muscle March and stuff like that. And I was trying to play with them also and not be a total...
Hey, we played Choaniki as well.
Yeah. Damn right.
And so if you go watch
the video of us playing Choaniki in Muscle March, Johnny is in the background. Every time you hear him, he's editing.
Yeah, I'm editing 400. And because you guys were in there and you were talking and playing the game and laughing and doing what you're supposed to be doing, I had my hardcore isolation, like, plug-in earphones. And so I had the volume way lower than I normally do, because those aren't the headphones I usually edit with. And so the audio came out way too low. And also I figured, as a matter of trying to make it sound better, I mixed together the left and right channels that we had two shotgun microphones in the studio. And I figured, well, they're going to sound kind of weird in stereo. And in the past, we tried to do that and people don't like it. It's a little different in Skype because you have a single channel input. And so you have certain people that if you can't hear the left side, you don't get those people's voices at all. And in the studio, it's a little different. It's just some people might be louder on one ear versus the other. Anyway, it sounds fine in stereo. I should have just done that in the first place. So I went back and I remixed the entire episode 400, all 3+ hours of it. And it is now much better volume balancing, much closer to a normal episode of the show. And it's in true stereo throughout, not just the music, but the vocals as well. And I think it sounds way, way, way better. The quality is better across the board. It still had, I went back and manually redid all the chapters and the chapter art. And I had to redo the credits where we give shout outs to the donors and all that stuff. It was time consuming, but I really wanted to do it because it was such a special episode. So if you had any complaints, or if you just want an excuse to go back and listen to that over again, whether now or years later when you go back to it, if you download that episode now, you will get the new version. So if you're subscribed, you can download the copy that you already have, or delete the copy you already have and just re-download it from the feed, and you'll get the new one. Or you can go to our website, go to the listing for episode 400, and the direct links there also point to the new file. So I think it's much better. I hope you enjoy it. I know there were a lot of complaints about the volume to begin with, and those should definitely be fixed now. So I hope you will enjoy that.
Yeah, we're calling this RFN 400 the Master Chief Collection, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. It's perfect. Well, and one more thing before we go. You know, this time of year, there's lots of new video games coming out. It's a really big time for us. That's why we just spent an entire episode on new business. But it's also a big time for movie releases. There's a lot of really interesting stuff that comes out at the end of the year. Studios trying to get stuff out for Oscar contention. So I wanted to put in a plug. I don't do this too often, but I'm on a show called Box Office Poison with our friends Carl and Stan and Mike and John, a lot of them involved in Radio Free Nintendo in the past. And it is the show's setup is very similar to this one. It's just us having friendly conversations about movies instead of video games. I think if you like the show, you'll really enjoy that one. If you like movies, you'll get a kick out of our conversations and reviews of movies over there. We just talked about Taxi Driver, so we do classic movies as well as brand new movies. We're about to do Interstellar, and if you think you would like to hear us talk about that stuff, I hope you will check that out. It's over at crosstalk.com. That's crosstawk.com, or on iTunes, you can just do a search for Crosstalk or Box Office Poison. It'll come up either way. And I hope you'll check it out. It's a good time of year to get into that. And, of course, we just did Box Office Poison live on the telethon. We talked about Wing Commander. We usually talk about much better movies than Wing Commander.
Chiron's opinion is an informed opinion of an individual game, who represents that as true science fiction.
Apparently it has its defenders, as it turns out. Yes. But generally speaking, we talk about much better movies than that. So I hope you'll check it out sometime. It's a good time of year to do it. Anyway, that's all for this episode. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next time with more Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
We will be back with literally more of it. There will be an additional amount from the amount you currently have available to you.
It's
an iterative process.
Just say bye.
It is a continual contribution to the totality that makes up Radio Free Nintendo.
Like a layer of sediment in a rock.
By the way, if you were to listen to this totality, you'd probably die before you finished, just so you know. Because you'd have to eat at some point, and you wouldn't be, because you'd be too enraptured by these dulcet tones.
I hate my life.
We lost a segment where we talk about Earthbound, but I'm glad that we're recording this.
So am I. This is performance art.
Yep. All right.
Ah.